All right, well, good evening. This is an interview for the Michigan Writer Series, Friday, September 12, 2003. I'm speaking with Craig Holden, an MFA graduate from the University of Montana, who has published four novels, including the critically acclaimed Four Corners of Night, winner of the 1999 Great Lakes Book Award. Welcome to MSU, Craig.
Thank you.
In an article in today's State News, you're quoted as saying that the public's perception of what it means to be a writer is not very accurate, and they see a lot of glamour, or more glamour than it really is. So would you care to elaborate on that?
Well, I think that's true, because I think what the public sees is just the few glamorous parts of it. You know, I mean, the press and the interviews and the signings and those sorts of things. And, you know, day in and day out, that's almost never what you do as a writer. What you do is sit in a room by yourself and and try to write, which is not really very glamorous at all. And I think people also, I think some people have an impression that the lifestyle is easier than it is, because it's, you know, they imagine if you're not, you know, if you're not having to work 40 hours a week at a job, it's pretty great. But it's and it can be at times. But the thing is, it's also a very tough way to make a living unless you're a big bestseller, just because it's so uneven. I mean, even if you make, you know, even if you get a nice check for a particular book, it can be years in between books, and it just gets to be, you know, a grind in that sense. It's just very hard sometimes to sort of keep things going, you know. And it can be pretty disconcerting, so, but nobody sees that.
Oh, well, we are doing your interview after reading, which is a little different from the normal routine, and you talked a lot about your routine. So do you, you know, getting up in the morning and going to your office and writing?
Yes.
You know, and making a regular habit out of that. So do you talk a lot about that at your readings, typically?
Usually the question comes up.
Okay.
I mean, people are interested in the process, very much, I think, in the process of writing. And I think it's interesting, too, just because writers all tend to be so different. I mean, I know a lot of writers write in the mornings, but a lot of them write at night. And, you know, the questions come up as to whether you write longhand or on a computer or whatever. And, you know, every writer has his or her own way of doing things. And you know, they'll all tell you that that's the only way to really do it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I write on a computer.
Okay, well, your four novels have been very different, but I found one common theme was that they all are in some way about law and order. You have police and federal agents and sometimes lawyers populating your novels. And The Last Sanctuary, in fact, which was published the year after the Oklahoma City bombing and featured several main characters who were ATF agents, used the Branch Davidian fiasco in 93 and then the Oklahoma City bombing as, you know, just points of reference, you know, as background for the characters. Do you ever anticipate using 9/11 in a similar way?
It's a good question, you know, and I, at this point, I don't. I mean, I've already seen things published about that, by whether it's a poem in the New Yorker or a short story or songs or whatever. And I myself just couldn't imagine writing about that right now. It's so close. Right. I tend to need to have a lot of distance from things to write about them, whether it's a locale, you know, or if I'm basing somebody on a character or something like that. I mean, I didn't really start writing well about the Midwest until I didn't live here for a long time, and I just need to have that space, I think, to create it. And 9/11 is just still so fresh. And I don't think that we understand half of the implications of it, either in terms of what caused it or what it's going to lead to, you know. I suppose there's a play, I just heard about this play that's in production somewhere, must have been on NPR, I heard this, that's set the day after on 9/12, and it's about a blind date. So it doesn't have anything directly to do with 9/11, you know, in terms
of... Sure, but that's in the background.
But it, yes. Now, that is sort of an interesting thing. I mean, that, I think, in my writing, that would come out sooner than sort of directly, something directly related to it. In my writing, you know, it's interesting that you say that, talk about the law and order thing. What I really think of these as all are in some way crime novels, because I see crimes as ways into character. I mean, you really find out about a character in conjunction with a crime in a lot of ways that you can't in any other way. Although my new book is about, in some sense, by the end, it's about law and order, but it's not heavily about it. It's a very different kind of story. But really, that's what it's about, is about getting into character, getting into a character through crime in some way. And 9/11, you know, how do you use that to, it's just so big, right, that I mean, it's and I also wouldn't want to exploit it, I think, you know, mm-hmm, in a way as a crime story. But I could see, you know, setting something in the aftermath that had nothing to do with it. I think that might be interesting, okay, someday.
Someday. Okay. And, well, speaking of your new novel that you're working on, you talked about it in your reading, The Narcissist's Daughter.
Yes.
You said it's set in the late 70s, mm-hmm, and the protagonist is a pre-med student who gets involved into some seedy doings. You were a pre-med student in,
yes,
the late 70s.
I was, yeah, for a short time,
late,
yeah,
70s, early 80s.
Right.
Any connection there to real life?
Well, only on the surface.
Okay.
But I said before, I need distance from things to write about them. When I went to graduate school, after I knew I wasn't going to go to medical school, I realized that I needed to start writing about characters who weren't me. And I tell my students this too. You know, you always hear that dictum, write what you know. But, mm-hmm, really, when you start writing what you don't know, that's when you start really writing. And obviously, you need to know a situation. You need to know the world. But when you start inventing characters who aren't you, mm-hmm, you really are forced to imagine it in a way that is different than if you're writing sort of semi-autobiographically. So I really tried very much to stop writing about myself, so I have characters who are, you know, heroin addicts and car,
right,
thieves and all those sorts of things. But it's been now 25 years since I was a pre-med student in the late 70s. So I thought, you know, it's been long enough that I can allow myself to go back and have a character who, in the surface of things, has some of the, you know, some of the same, mm-hmm, life that I had.
Right.
I mean, the other great similarity is that he works in a lab, which I also did.
Yes.
I mean, he's a drug blood. In fact, I gave him my job.
But phlebotomist.
Right. And even how he got the job was how I got my job. I mean, why make it up if it's,
sure,
you know, if it's all there? But what happens to him and what he does and who his family is are nothing that ever happened to me. So I use that sort of familiar part of it as a jumping off point,
sure,
to go into the rest of the fiction. So, yeah.
Do you strongly identify with any of your characters?
Parts of me do. I really think my characters, a lot of my books are split between several characters,
mm-hmm,
which is, I think, part of the reason that they sometimes have trouble selling, because people, I think, want to identify with a strong central character. I mean, if you look at the Jazzbird, you know, there's three main,
right,
characters. If you look at The River Sorrow, there's two main characters. In Last Sanctuary, there's two main characters. Four Corners of Night, even though it's a first-person novel, it's really,
mm-hmm,
one guy telling a story about another guy. I think that those are all parts of a personality, of my personality. I really think that these characters are different parts of me. So another thing that I'm doing differently in this book that I'm writing now is that I'm really using a central character who's not only the storyteller but also the main actor in the story, and who also is based in some measure, you know, comes from the,
mm-hmm,
world I came from. So we'll see how it turns out. I mean, maybe I've finally been able to integrate all these pieces together into one character. I don't know. But
I think perhaps your uniqueness of using multiple character perspectives really sets you apart from other writers in your genre. I mean, you have an MFA. You know, a lot of writers out,
right,
there don't.
Right.
So you have a very strong literary background,
yes,
and you teach.
Yes.
So, you know, celebrate that.
Oh, yeah.
You
know? No, I like,
yeah,
it. And that's really how I became successful at it, because,
mm-hmm,
when I first started writing, trying to write commercially, I was trying to write commercially and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And when I stopped trying to write commercially and started to write like I knew how to write, but I was working on a commercial novel, if that makes sense,
mm-hmm,
it suddenly,
sure,
worked, because like you say, I brought all this stuff, all the literary stuff and the training back to it, so that these characters suddenly became a lot more interesting than I think your usual character in a, you know,
right,
in a detective novel.
Well, you mentioned that you have, you know, multiple main characters in some of your novels. And you write very strong women characters, I think, unlike a lot of male mystery thriller writers out,
uh-huh,
there. How did you get good at writing strong female characters?
I don't know. I've always been good at it. I mean, if I look back,
mm-hmm,
to the beginning, I think it's all a part of pieces of my personality. You know, and,
okay,
you know, there's that old cliche about being in touch with your feminine,
sure,
side. Well, I think I am. But I tell my students the story of the first story that I ever wrote when I was 24 that was seen by other people as being a good story. In other words, you know, you write stories and you can, people can read them and say, you know, the writing's good, but it,
mm-hmm,
really doesn't move them. The first story I ever wrote that really moved people and you can tell when that happens, how they react to it, was from the perspective of a 45-year-old widow, chain-smoking widow. And that's what I meant about getting outside myself. When I stopped writing about a 24-year-old guy and started writing about a woman who was in her 40s, I mean, it was the same world. It was the, these were people I knew, but I was suddenly in this different mindset, and I put it into her head. And it just worked in a way that the other stuff didn't work. And I've never had any problem going back and forth between, you know, from from one gender to the others. I mean, even in the beginning, so.
Well, with its multiple storylines and flashback sequences, how did you write Four Corners of Night? You know, did you write each narrative separately and then weave them together, or did your first draft look much like your final book?
No, it was a mess. it took me a long time to get to it. It started out, though, in three, it started out with three different strands. So it wasn't like I wrote one strand and then went back and wrote another. It really did start, but I didn't know, I didn't understand the relationship. In other words, the three strands were one, in the present tense story, you've got a young girl who's just disappeared and these two detectives, Mac and Bank, who are investigating it. In the past, whatever it is, 7 years back or whatever, Bank's daughter disappeared. Mm-hmm. So you have the reconstruction of that story. And then you have the third line, which is the childhood and growing up of these two guys together. Right. All three of those started separately. And at one point or another, I think I thought I was writing the beginning of the novel when I started each of those because I didn't know what the story was. And then they each kept going. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was either in big trouble or they were going to have to somehow come together. I had no idea how they were going to come together. And that's really what was the hardest part of writing that book. I was able to write the first half of that book pretty smoothly. Mm-hmm. And then I was stuck for a long, long time about halfway through because I didn't know where it went. Mm-hmm. And I talked tonight about how sometimes I look back and if I've made a mistake, you know, I get stuck. Yes. And in that book, I had made a couple of fundamental mistakes, assumptions about the ending that were wrong. And until I went back and rethought through all that and realized what mistakes I had made, I couldn't write it. And when I did figure out what I had done wrong, I realized some things, not only about the characters, but also I finally understood how these strands came together. And it was all, and they had to come together, and they had to be, they all had to be there to work. And it was really kind of mind-boggling because I hadn't thought, I hadn't seen any of this until I got far into it. And when I got to the end, it was just so logical how all these things came together. But I never foresaw that. So it really, again, it was that sort of unconscious working, you know, that mechanism that somehow, I knew that it was about, not just a story about these two guys, but about the whole relationship with these two guys. I knew that it went, you know, it had to be about their lives, not about just some crime.
Right.
And the easy way out in that book would have been just to make it some kind of a serial killer thing or something like that. And there were days when I wanted to do that just because I couldn't write. Mm-hmm. But I just kept going back to their relationship and, you know, what had it been like growing up for them. And and finally that led to the solution.
Yeah, you know? I have to say that the twist in it really took me by surprise. And I was breathless for a little bit.
Me too.
But the three storylines really converged beautifully. And at the end, I think it's a bit ambiguous because you don't know how the characters are going to go on, and more so than in your other novels. And I thought that's the mark of a really great writer, is to leave an open-ended story like that.
And I felt in that book that it was justified because it was told from the point of view of one of the characters who couldn't know all the answers. Yeah. In other words, he wanted to know the answers, but it wouldn't have been believable if he had figured everything out, you know. And so if he couldn't figure it out, then we couldn't know either, you know.
Exactly.
I've been asked a lot of times, you know, what's the truth? And I don't know either. I mean,
it's up to us.
Right.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it. Well, you talked at length about the jazz bird and your research for it. You said you found George Remus' story and you were fascinated by that, but how did you actually stumble onto it at the very beginning?
I had the idea of doing a historical novel and talked to my editor, and she liked the idea very much, and I had always been attracted, I'd always been very interested in the 20s. I just think it's a fascinating decade in many ways, not just the whole prohibition crime thing, but culturally. Really, it's the beginning of the modern age, and in terms of the literature of the 20s, I mean, there was just an incredible explosion of new kinds of literature and art And then, you know, radio came in the early 20s. Flight began to become more common. People began to own cars. You know, most people began to own cars. Just the whole world changed. It's an amazing decade. So I really just started out by reading histories. I got some books, histories of the 20s and also histories of Prohibition. And if you look at the big books on Prohibition, the way they tend to work is they'll give you like the structure of how Prohibition was set up, and then they'll give you little vignettes of some of the colorful characters of the of the era. And Remus is always one of these little vignettes in these books. I mean, I could find three or four histories of Prohibition that all tell the Remus story, but it's always told just in a couple of pages. Yeah. You just get the outline of the story. And they'll do this with a bunch of different characters. And I read it once or twice along with these other ones and didn't really even think about it. And then I was sitting one day, thinking about what kind of a story was this going to be, and that story came back into my mind, and I thought, I had to get the book out and read it again, because I thought, you know, if I read that correctly, that's one of the most amazing stories, true stories that I've ever heard of. And then I thought it had to have been done some way, either as a film. I mean, it would have been a great noir film in the 40s, you know.
Yeah.
But I checked, and nobody had ever really done it. There were some really minor books written about it. But
so you stumbled onto a gem, and you just fleshed it out.
Yes. Yeah, it really was. It was just serendipitous.
Well, I love the little details, like the alienist, you know, for the term that was in vogue then for psychologists today. And then the machine, and they got into their machine. For the machine, I'm like, oh, car. I had to keep reminding myself, this is the 1920s.
And I wanted to be accurate about
details
that.
Like that. Yeah.
But at the same time, you have to be careful not to make it irritating either, you know, because it can go over. And the thing about the 20s, too, that's funny is that they had so many little jingles and terms for things, nicknames for, you know, there are all these cute terms, and a little bit of that goes really a long way. So, you know, if you start putting all that in there, it gets very irritating. So I actually also went back and read a bunch of novels from the 20s just to see how they handled the language, you know, and that was helpful too, you know, to go back and read Fitzgerald and early Hemingway and those sorts of things. So
yeah, I thought your reference list at the end of The Jazz Bird was just phenomenal. A great primer for anybody who wants to read up more on the 20s.
Well, hopefully. And I think there's some links on the website to some websites, too, that, that detail some. It's interesting, I think, for people to go back and read about Remus only because it does differ from the novel.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I mean, if people want to know the real story, it's not as...
They can do the digging.
Yeah, exactly.
Good. Speaking of your website, craigholden.com, you mentioned that you used to be a film rights agent, and in fact, you were just talking about how the George Remus story could have made a great film noir.
Yes.
And in fact, you mentioned that your second book, The Last Sanctuary, was briefly optioned for a film.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if any of your other books have been optioned, and if you'd like to see one turned into a film.
I'd love to see them all turned into films.
Would you like to adapt them to the screen?
Sure. I mean, yes and no. I mean, I've done it. I actually adapted The Last Sanctuary. I did a version of it, but none of them are under option. I mean, that's the answer to the question. And the only one that's ever been optioned was Last Sanctuary. And yet there's always been great interest in them. I mean, I know that they're widely read out there, and they're covered, as they say. But they're, you know, they tend to be pretty dark books, and they tend to be pretty complex stories. And the powers that be just have shied away from them to this point. I think if one of them gets made, it'll probably be made outside of Hollywood, you know, by a smaller company, European company or Canadian company or whatever, or a New York company. And so I don't know. I mean, it's just a question of waiting and seeing what happens. I think something will get made eventually, but they're just hard books. You know, they're not your typical star vehicle. When you've got these pretty flawed central characters, and it makes people nervous. I know also that the Remus story was...
Those are the kinds of performances, though, that can win, or roles that can win Oscars.
Yes. They're also nervous about Remus just because it's historical, and that means big budget automatically. And
lavish sets and all that.
Yes, exactly. So we'll see. It'll happen.
I could see The Last Sanctuary being filmed up in Canada, where it's cheaper, too, and a lot of our films are made there anyway.
Half of
and
it in Vancouver, so...
In Alaska, too, so...
Right.
Okay. Well, last question.
Okay.
This being the Michigan Writer Series, we always ask our guests what living in Michigan has on their work, or what impact living in Michigan has on their work. And it's your case, it's pretty obvious in your case that you know, a lot of your work has been set in Michigan, or at least mentioned Michigan places. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate a little more on what living in Michigan brings to your writing?
Well, I tend not to think of it as Michigan so much as a part of the Midwest. I mean, being from Ohio, to me, it's just part of that same region. And I also think it's interesting that I live in Ann Arbor, which is not like the rest of the of the area. You know what I'm saying? It's Ann Arbor, sort of its own thing.
Yeah.
It's not
they
Toledo,
like to
you know.
That. Yeah.
But these books are generally set in more industrial sorts of places. So it's as I said before, you know, because I like to have some distance from what I'm writing about. It's helpful for me to live in a place like Ann Arbor when I'm writing about a place like Toledo or Jackson or whatever, just because I'm not there every day looking at it. I think it's better that way. But otherwise, I don't know. I mean, I often wonder what would I be writing if I didn't live here? I probably would be writing the same things.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what effect that would have on it. I don't know if it has a huge effect or not, other than, as I say, just where I am right now is, I mean, I can't imagine setting something in Ann Arbor, you know.
It's too close.
Yeah, right. It's too close, and it's not the ambiance that I write about, you know.
Sure.
The ambiance I write about is a grittier, dirtier place, and I'm glad Ann Arbor's not like that.
Yeah, to raise your kids in especially.
Right, exactly.
Well, thank you very much, Craig, for participating in the MSC Libraries Michigan Writer Series. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Thank you.